Facing challenges and overcoming setbacks is part of doing business. Whether you have the expertise to survive them or not could mean the difference between success or failure. Welcome to We Are Women, featuring revealing conversations that provide invaluable insights into the success secrets of female masterminds. A must listen for every entrepreneurial woman. Now here's your host, Janine Vosper.
Hi, it's Janine Vosper, and welcome to this episode of the We Are Women podcast. Today, I have Dr. Desiree Bick-Harry. She launched her startup coaching business following a 30-year career in an area which she's dedicated herself in her professional passions and expertise, which is a little bit different to most of us, and it's project management and disaster management. So that's why I'm excited about having this conversation with her, because it's obviously topics that we haven't covered in the past. Desiree is also a lecturer and supervisor of the Master of Project Management program at the University of South Australia. An experienced facilitator, presenter, and conflict management trainer, she is a qualified and experienced English and French teacher. Now, Desiree Bick-Harry coaching is set to her new passion and is dedicated to empowering women and ensuring they find their mojo, their self-esteem and their confidence. And as you know, that's one of the major passions for me as well. So we're going to have a great conversation. Desiree strongly believes in the advancement and the empowerment of women professionally, financially and personally. Her dream. I love this. When I read it, I thought, well, this is so cool. Her dream is to run the Great Wall of China marathon, be a helicopter pilot, have 2 horses and 5 dogs. Now, I'm just trying to picture how you would do all of that together. I think that's very cool and something I want to ask about. But welcome, Desiree. It's great speaking to you. We had a little conversation the other day and I thought, no, this is going to be of high value to my listeners.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Janine. It's an honor to be on your show, and I'm very excited to be speaking to you and to anyone of the listeners who will be hearing this video or the podcast. Thank you so much for having me.
You're most welcome. Now, I have to ask, are you a marathon runner already?
Yes, I am.
Well, that helps, doesn't it? It becomes a bit more
of a
goal.
Oh, yes, I would. The Great Wall of China isn't something that you just take on as a first marathon. I mean, you could. Maybe I would if I had known about it. But, yeah, no, it's not my first rodeo, as they say.
And particularly the interest in doing that one is just because it's quite unique.
Look, I have to tell you, running marathons was never something I've ever... Running in the first place is not something I'm interested in, or I used to be interested in. And then when I went to the running shop, because I thought I needed to go and buy a pair of trainers, there happened to be like this cupboard, glass wardrobe with lots of medals in it. So I was looking at them and I realized they were marathon medals. So I said, God, whoever owns this shop must be a real champion. They've won all these marathons. And then the guy says to me, you don't have to win one. You just have to participate, finish in the time, and you get a medal.
Oh,
like, you get a medal for finishing? So you just need to finish within the time allocated, you know, whatever your speed is, and you get a medal. So that's what got me into, I thought, oh my God, I've never received a medal for anything, so that would be my thing. So there I went, starting to train for running, forget the marathons, but running with the aim of a little marathon eventually.
Mm.
Then I went to one of the marathons and there were lots of stands from agencies who are promoting different marathons. I came across the Great Wall of China medal. Oh my God, sold. The medal. It's all about the medals. Forget the hardship, the training and all that stuff. It's all about the medals from you. So I saw that medal and it has the Great Wall of China on it, but it's amazing. And I thought, I want one of those on hanging somewhere in my house or in my office. So that was all that I needed to sell it. So it can sound a little bit silly for some people that all it took was a medal, and you, all the work you need to get to that medal. But I just love the design of it. It was incredible. I want one of those, and I can't buy it.
Well, look, that's one of the things when, you know, I teach people to do is how to set goals, but you need something as that motivating factor. And it doesn't matter what it is, if it's something that you know, I desperately want to do this, you know, the marathon or running, a lot of people start to get fit and lose weight, but sometimes it doesn't, it's not enough to keep you going. Whereas I want that medal, and that's a different place.
It's I mean, whatever rocks your boat, really, whatever it is that will give you that incentive. For me, it's the medal. And I know, I mean, sometimes my husband says to me, why don't you just go in your shop and buy something and pick a medal? And I'm like, yeah, but, you know, when you talk about it, it's a totally different experience. And I have got quite a few medals for running marathons, but that will be at the top of the pyramid, I would believe.
Well done. I used to do fun runs a lot and ran, but never got to the marathon distance. And the body, now after 10 years of teaching aerobics and running, the body a few years later, a couple of decades later, goes, I think that was quite enough. Walking will do.
Yes. You have to listen to your body, absolutely. You really do have to do it. I did hurt my back and I had to stop for a few years, and I had to learn to run all over again because I had an operation on my back, and luckily it was during COVID, so there were no races or anything, organized races anyway, happening. But you do have, your body will tell you when you're not doing the right thing by it, and you don't want to get hurt.
Most definitely. And that's part of this, I was going to say, this whole empowerment thing, which is really unfair, isn't it? But that's part of feeling that sense of empowerment yourself, is knowing what you want to achieve and then putting plans in place to get there. Once you, even the journey along the way is usually the more empowering part than reaching the goal. But it's also then not being empowered to say no to distractions.
Exactly. And for me, whether it's running or whether it's work, whether it's money, whatever it is that you're trying to reach, it's not about the what, it's about more the how and what you, and being able to listen to all those. When we talk about intuition, it's like intuition, when you break it down, is tuition from within. That's your body teaching you something, or your mind teaching you something. It's really important that you listen to that intuition, because your body and your mind, your subconscious, is operating at a different level and it knows what you are going through. So empowerment is about hearing that thing that's going on in you, not hearing your mind, but hearing that message and being open to hearing it.
That's really, I've never ever heard that explained in that way, whereas it's tuition within, for intuition. Yes. And I've interviewed a lot of people, I've talked about it a lot myself, is using that intuition, that the body subconsciously giving you directions as to, but I've never heard it reframed as tuition within. But that's exactly what it is. Yes,
it is tuition from within. And most people say, you know, when you talk about what does your gut tell you, I mean, that's your intuition. Mm. And people poo-poo it. But no, the more we connect with that message that's coming in, that's your education. That's something that no one can tell you about your body, about your feeling, your mind, your spirit. And all of that is combined in your subconscious to actually give you that information. And that's where your tuition comes in. So if you listen to it, you're bound to make the right decision and to follow that path, no matter what your head is telling you, because our head can fool us quite a bit. So that's why whether it's running, whether it's studies, whether it's job, whether it's taking a chance with, you know, whatever, listen to what it's telling you. And if your feeling is one way or another, run with it, because it's the right thing. It knows for you.
Mm. And sometimes we just need to be quiet, don't we, to hear that?
Totally. And you know what? One of the things that I find really truly enjoyed about running was that when I hit about 7 kilometers, it's hard work and everything, but that's when the world shuts out, you know, all the noises in your head, which I call the itty bitty shitty committee.
I love that. Do you want to say that again, Desiree?
Itty bitty shitty committee. That's the committee that's in your head, yacking away all this stuff. It's about, for me, about that at 7 kilometers, the committee is shut off. You finally get to tell them to shut up.
Yep.
And then I hear me, or there is that silence. Then all I hear is my breathing. My feet's going one foot in front of the other. I hear my breathing and it's all connected. Feet breathing. It's silence. I mean, I know it's an extreme way. Some people will meditate. Some people will do different things to find that peace. But there's nothing more serene than actually being alone with your head and your head shutting off and just being alone with being, you know. And I find it in running, you know, I can just run, but it takes time because your body is asking a lot. That's what shuts everything else out.
I can truly understand that. I used to be the first 1 to 2 kilometers. I love that itty bitty shitty committee. I would have every reason, everything was hurting, everything was, you know, why am I here? What am I doing? It's not comfortable. Breathing's not right. And then I'd get in a bit of the zone. You know, you just go, yes. You're just doing it rather than thinking about doing it. You're just doing
exactly.
it. Yeah.
Exactly. And then the pain, you know, you're aware of stuff going on, but, you know, it's quiet and you can just be doing your thing. And that zone is an amazing place to be. And I think you find that whether you're writing, whether you're exercising, whether you're meditating, you know, meditating can be really difficult, you know, to stay focused. People think 10 minutes, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, start with 1 minute because it's hard. Focus is hard. If you start with 1 minute and you achieve that, then add another minute when you're ready. When you hit that moment, you'll know it.
I'm glad you mentioned that because meditation is hard. And I have so many people say to me, oh, I can't clear the thoughts out of my head. And well, that'll be the outcome, but that's not what you're doing while you're trying to meditate. Just sit and watch your candle. If you get a thought, say, oh, I've got a thought. And then if another thought comes in, I've got another thought. And eventually you'll start to get into a space where that you recognize the thoughts, or they just don't sort of interfere with what you've got. We talked about turning phones off earlier, and then mine rang. Then I don't have it in when I'm interviewing, and it rang. And that's that part of, you know, that being in control of yourself, and that in the that empowerment. It's just not, I see people so busy all the time, you know, this constant busyness, and it doesn't allow for that opportunity to get into that sense, does it?
No, it doesn't. And one of the best advice that I've had in regards to this busyness, because we are busy, I mean, especially women, if you consider most women, even if whether they're in a partnership or not, they have two jobs. They have their if they're working, they have the full-time jobs that they have, or part-time, whatever work they have. And while they're working, they're also working overtime in their mind, because there's the home thing that they've got to do. Then they get home and they're working again at the weekends. They're not working to get paid from their job, but they're working because they are a homemaker, they are mums, they are partners. So we're permanently working. So having that time, that switch off time, is so vital. And the one thing that I was taught once was to have a coffee with myself.
Okay.
Don't sit at home and have that coffee with myself. Go to a coffee shop that I like, not too far so I have to get stressed out too. Just go somewhere in a coffee shop, go sit there, either sit there with a coffee and people watch, sit there with a book and read, grab a paper, but just go have a coffee with myself. It doesn't even have to be productive as such, but just go have a coffee with myself and just see what happens. you know, and that has for me been so good. I mean, a coffee, how long does it take at the most? Half an hour, but once you get into the groove of it, once a week to go for a coffee with yourself, you long for it. You really do long for it, and you kind of miss having that date with yourself because you know that was your me time. The rest of the world can happen, but if you have that me time, that coffee with yourself or tea, whatever it is, or your cake, it's amazing. It's sublime. And I've been doing this for some time now, and it works. It really does work.
I always, if I'm working from home, I always take a lunch break, and I'll go and read while eating lunch, or I will do something, but I take a break, and that's and it can be 30 minutes or even an hour sometimes, depending on what I'm doing. But I found it particularly, you know, when we weren't able to get out as much as we were, that it was a really valuable time. Again, it was very much, I'm gifting this to me. I don't have to. I don't have to. I'm gifting this absolute time to me. And that it was, and I still do it. It's really important to be able to do that.
It is, and it doesn't even have to be, like, nobody's saying go shopping and window shop and look at the things that you may or may not be able to afford, etc. You're sitting down having a coffee. How much more with a cake, maybe? 10 bucks? You know, it's not going to cost you a fortune, but the space it creates for yourself, you just let your mind run off to every direction that you want. Eventually, once you get used to it, you'll find it's very peaceful and it's very creative, actually. It's a very creative space to be, to create whatever it is that you like to create. And even if it's create nothing, grand.
Yeah.
You don't have to do anything. No production there. It's coffee with yourself.
I love it. What got you into project management and disaster management? They're quite masculine fields, a little bit different than what a lot of women might choose to do.
Yes, they are. Look, can I tell you that my very first experience, because I was born on a very tiny little island that has cyclones everywhere, kind of like in the east coast of Australia where you are. Mm-hmm. And my very first experience with a natural disaster was when we'd had the class 5 cyclone, and then we'd all been stuck in the house for 5 days or so. And when it was all clear, we were given the all clear, my granddad said, okay, we have to get out. You know, we had cabin fever. He took us out for a drive. And as we drove around the island, I remember seeing one family. I mean, there was a lot of devastation. And I remember seeing one family. All you saw was the slab of the house. The house had been flattened. They were all walking around looking so desolate, so lost. Their eyes were seeing, but they were glazed. And it was something. I was, I think, about 8 years old when I saw that, when I witnessed that. It has never left me.
Wow.
You know, never. And at that time, I thought, one day I'm going to be in a position to be able to help people like this. Then I forgot about it. Women, I can tell you, to talk of project management, women are natural born project managers.
Oh, I agree with that.
We have to get up before we've actually raised our head off our pillow. We're planning, putting in things into place. Time. After this, do this. After this, do that. What have we got to do? Where are we going to achieve? What's the outcome of that? What are we going to plan? Whose birthday party? When are we going to take the kids? But whatever it is your life is about, we are naturally born project managers.
Yeah.
And I did, when I arrived in Australia, I did a very basic diploma of project management. And when I listened to it, I thought, I've been this all my life. And I just didn't have the words or the terminologies or the the jargon to go with it. But I thought, you know this, do this all the time. But I did a really, I got really good grades. And my lecturer then at TAFE said, you know, Desiree, you did so well in this, you should do a master's in it, because I think you're kind of wasted doing this and you're a natural book at it. So I looked into it. I thought, master's, that sounds really high. And I did. I just enrolled in it, finished that, realized I was really good at it, and never stopped. But I just want women to know that project management is a very big word. And when you're talking academic, you learn the jargon, but the doing, you can do it because you do it already naturally. So it was an easy thing. So in all the jobs I'd had before, previously I was in event management. I was at the UN and I was doing their emergency travel and conferences coordination. So moving people, UN delegates from one place to another really quickly. Within 3 days, I had to mobilize a whole bunch of people. So it was pretty stressful. And I realized that there was that emergency management part in the event management, which is also project management, but events, you have a date and you have to do everything to meet that date. Projects is you start and then you're finished when you're finished, technically at an end date, but projects can be a bit different. And then several years later in Australia, I got to do a position where I worked for Safecom to do risk and emergency management. And I realized how much I loved it. I loved it. And suddenly I thought of those people I saw when I was 8 after the cyclone. Right. Then I realized, well, my dream is coming true. Yeah. We can do something. So it all kind of evolved. It's like universe just, and I don't mean to speak too woo-woo about everything, but when I say universe kind of made things happen for me, it did, because my desire from a childhood is I wanted to help those people. I feel that I needed to have all the experience I needed to have in order to be able to help those people, but that takes time. And then suddenly there I was working in disaster management. And it was then I thought, yes, this is what we do. And I tell you, Australia pours a lot of money into disaster management. Mm. I worked for a collaborative cooperative research center for disaster management, natural hazards. And there are some absolutely amazing researchers, amazing people in all the disaster management field who are doing so much research to make sure that Australia keeps its people resilient from natural hazards. We can't stop the natural disaster from happening, but we can make sure we have the right science, we have the right economy, we have the right messaging, we have the right outlook to make sure that the consequences of the natural hazards are diminished so that people, that lives are saved, which is the ultimate.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah, that, and I love all your story and that progression through there. And I'm very much the believer that the universe gives us the opportunities. We just need to see that the doors open to step through that. And it's great to hear that there's all of those, because lay people don't know what goes on behind the scenes, but to know that that happens, and Australia is, I love the Dorothy McKellar poem, a land of sweeping plains, of rugged mountain ranges, of drought and flooded rains. And it tends to be, there's always something going on in Australia. We've got fires on one side of the country at the moment and flooding on the other, and a cyclone, two cyclones up north. So there's always something happening. So
yes.
Great. It's I don't think you'll ever be out of a position there, Desiree, in dealing with that. not here anyway. To be able to take all those steps and to get into those roles and have that passion for doing that, what's some tips you can give for people? Because we're saying, well, the women are natural project managers, we've got 1,000 things going through our head that we need to do. But when you've been working in those fields and creating those projects or the events, strategies to not feel overwhelmed and be able to manage it, so that people can think about that for their, not just for their businesses, but for themselves.
Look, I would say there are. So you'd like, sorry, just to confirm, you want
just some tips and techniques that you would suggest that you've used to, so that you don't have this sense of, you know, and I look, I see some people just get in and do things, but I also see others have got feel overloaded, and they may both people might have had the same amount of work to do, but they handle it differently. So techniques for handling that capacity well.
Yeah, I would say if it comes to this part of the overwhelm and how to do those kinds of things, which are three tips that I can give, which is very different to my life tips, which are also very different. When it comes to work and managing overwhelm and all these different things, I would say each person has something that they're gifted to do, or that they know how to do, or they do well, or they do know how, they just know it. They just know, I can do this. I would say, before you jump into anything, take a deep breath, you know, have a think about it. Just, you know, to be able to achieve anything, it needs, when we talk about our mind's eye, you know, they talk about the middle eye. And again, I'm not going all woo-woo about it, but...
I've got lots of people that love woo-woo, so that's all good.
Yeah, but it's very... I don't really do anything until I've seen it with my mind's eye. It's like I've already plotted it. So that's what I'm saying. Take the time to breathe that. Think, okay, I've got this. Yes, it's exasperating and it's exhausting to actually think of all these things you've got. But while you're sitting and breathing, you're not doing any of it. You're just thinking about it. So put order in your mind first of how you're going to do it. Because if you know how you're going to do it in your mind, when it comes to doing the doing, you're in control. If you're just going without actually thinking about it, you don't have control because you haven't planned it. And women can do that. They can plan things because they do it naturally. So don't just do. It's take three breaths, calm yourself and think about what is it I've got to do, all these things. And if you can do that, I'm not saying it's going to be less stressful or it's going to be, it will appear less out of control. But if you've done that, then you can order it. You're going in with an amount of control because you've thought about it first. Maybe you haven't got the answers for number two and three, but you sure as hell know how to tackle number one. And if you tackle number one, well, then the process is easier because you remember how you tackle number one. Then hopefully you'll be able to put that into things. So think about it before you do it. And it doesn't take too long thinking, but it just needs to be done. A couple of breaths, three breaths is usually really good to sweep it in, sweep it out, sweep it in, sweep it out. You're calm, now you can think about it, and then you're ready to go. So I would say, and the other thing I would say, when you've got opportunities or things are being offered to you or thrown at you, if you will, and you know, you didn't ask for it, and the day you are, never turn down an opportunity. Never turn it down. No. It may be well out of your comfort zone. It may be something that you've still got to learn quick, fast, like. But don't turn it down unless it's asking you to give your life up or something like that. But don't turn it down. You don't know where that could lead you, you know. So
I find that all the time. I get asked by businesses, you know, we want you to come in and do some sales training. Can you do things? Some things about imposter syndrome. Sure. Can you? They keep adding things on. Sure, no problem.
Yes,
you know, I do have quite a few decades of doing things, so there's a repertoire to pull from. Yes. But of course, no problem.
Yes,
and but I've got set programs for people, set as in these are the things that you receive, but the learning outcomes from everyone, it's adaptable and change. It's got to be, and it's exactly what you're saying. Sure. No worries. Yes. I think that's one of my most common words I use when people say, can you do it? Yeah, sure.
So can, yes. And what I would like women to do, if you're a young person who's still growing in that experience, well, you're going to get another experience, so say yes to it. Mm-hmm. If you're mature and you've got a lot of experience, it doesn't matter if you haven't done that specific thing. You've got enough tools, you've got enough firepower in your armory to actually be able to learn and pull things from different things. Google is your friend. Get onto it, see what there is, and suddenly you think, about this, I don't know about that. And there might be a tiny little gap in there that you haven't done. Learn it quick, fast, and you've got your package ready, but don't say no. And the last thing is, if everything that's been happening to you, you're afraid. Fear should never paralyze you. Fear is, be aware of the fear, because we all have fears when we're trying something new. But fear can walk alongside you. It can remind you that you need to do your best. But don't let it stop. Don't let it paralyze you, because that fear is reminding you that is there to keep you honest, to show you your brilliance. And it's, but it shouldn't stop you from, you know, from acting, from moving, from doing. And the more you're aware of the fear, the more you're going to want to do your best, and it's what's going to deliver. If you let it paralyze, you're just not going to go anywhere, and you're going to kick yourself in any case afterwards beyond it. So walk along, let the fear walk along with you.
Yes, and that's part of that trust yourself, isn't it? Really trust that you can achieve it. I know I could form lists in my head, but I know it, for a lot of people it's really important to write things down too, because that clears it out of your head and you're not constantly thinking. And one of the things I also suggest for people is to not keep repeating what you've got to do. So don't think about it in your head and then say to the first, you know, person, I've got this, 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 and this, and this, and I've got this, and this, and this to do. And then the next person you meet, you say, I've got this, and this, this, and this, this to do. Because you keep building that intensity of that list every time, as opposed to doing it, as you're saying, just taking the steps and thinking about how you're going to do it, and then just doing it rather than sharing it with everyone, because that I've found when people do that, it adds intensity and adds a lot more stress to it.
Yeah, it's a bit like this snowball, you know. You have a little snowball, and every time you keep growing the thing, it's like you're growing that fear within you, and you're just making that ball bigger and bigger, bigger and bigger, and eventually that ball is just going to go right over you and crush you. And you don't want that. You want that ball to stay smaller. So you just want to be in control of it, and you know what you've got to do. You've made your list, had a good look at it, you're in order, fine, move on, you know. And it's I'm not saying that to belittle by saying it simply like that, but I think it's a question of practice, a question of knowing that you are in control. And I would say also, if you don't know how to do certain things, that's the reason why people like you and I exist. There are coaches to teach you that. Women are very mean to themselves by not wanting to invest in themselves. If it's a question of paying a couple of hundred dollars to get a coaching session to teach themselves to buying another pair of shoes for little Johnny or for lovely Jane, their kids, they will go out and buy those shoes for someone else, but they will not treat themselves to something that they could do. Maybe you need to be, when I say selfish, every now and then, just like having a coffee with yourself, know that investing in yourself, you'll get something out that you can buy two pairs of shoes for Johnny and Jane. It's so important to realize the value that by you paying that money, you're more likely to have more to give to those than not doing it and just being just the one time. This could be many times repeated if you only take the time to invest in yourself. And I think women are still having trouble doing that for themselves. Investing in themselves, learning and taking time to say, I deserve to learn this and I deserve to be coached. They need somebody to walk alongside me, not do it for me, but teach me how or help me along the way.
Yeah, that is absolutely so important. And I know it's something both you and I, you know, with what we have experienced and what we've invested in ourselves over the years, it's paid off multiple times. And it's been, for me and for you doing your doctorate as well, significant investments, but the value in it is quite phenomenal. And it's not just measuring that value in dollar figures, which obviously increases, measuring that value in that sense of that more knowledge and knowing for yourself. Knowledge is probably, you know, apart from your health, knowledge is the most valuable resource that you can have. Because of everything that's happening with AI and putting things online. I did an AI video this morning with this thing, and it's the worst thing I've ever seen. I've got to let them know. It's just horrible. It was my content, but it was created rather than me creating it and demonstrating my knowledge on it. And wherever we go in the future, knowledge is going to be your most valuable asset.
It is. And knowledge, and then you combine the knowledge with your experience, your intuition, your know-how, all of that put together, you cannot replace it. And I think women especially need to trust that investing in themselves is one of the best way they can serve whoever they want to serve, be it their family, their partners, themselves. And you can serve everyone else. I am a coach, but I also have my own coach. I have a business coach, I have a mindset coach. And just because I coach doesn't mean I don't need the help, because there's always need, you need to, we're always growing. And every time in a woman's phase, every phase in a woman's life, especially every 7 years or every 10 years, she goes through a different layer. I mean, and those layers that we go through are so incredibly powerful. And if we don't adapt and realize what we're going through, we can lose a lot of this wisdom that we bring in simply because we're not being accompanied. Sometimes we don't realize what's happening within us. Someone else can teach us or educate us on where we are in our phase of life. So I would say, always have someone who's got your back and who's looking at you from the outside and seeing you for who you are.
No, I love that. And even holding you accountable as well.
But especially holding you accountable. That doesn't mean holding a stick to it, saying, well, that's what you want. It's up to you. Yeah. And then you realize with the value what you're likely to gain from it. And I think women should remember to invest in themselves. That's one of the things that I find women are not doing. Because they think, oh yeah, but my child needs this, or they need that, I need to take them out, I need to pay out for this. What about what you need? And how can you serve your kids so much more?
I know, I've spoken to so many women over the years that their school activity will come up and there'll be an overseas trip that they pay for their child, but they've never been traveling themselves. They've never had that opportunity to do that themselves. And the richer you are within means the more that you can give out.
Exactly.
As well. And so, you know, it's that whole oxygen mask on first for you, and that way you can
exactly.
Help others. Yeah.
And it's not being selfish.
Well, I don't it's think it's selfish. No.
It's you, because let's not forget we are also role models for our children. Especially if we have daughters. So if all we do is be, you know, the sacrificial lamb, what are we teaching? What are we educating our kids? In the end, in the beginning, when they're young, they may be doing their own thing because you're providing, but they will repeat what you're doing, and you want them to be free of that. So we mustn't forget that we are role models. We want to show our kids that we know how to take care of ourselves. And that we've evolved. It doesn't mean being selfish, but you also have you as a human being. We came into this world alone. We're born single, even if you're twins or triplets, it's one at a time that comes out. So we need to be first we, then others. And we're much better able to serve the rest of our community, whatever that unit or community is, by being able to do that. And we're setting a precedent for those who come after, and they're watching you and they say, oh, well, mom did that, or auntie did that, or granny did that. And then we're showing that's how you have to do it. So there's a lot more to, so much more to women, because we are setting the precedent for the future generations. And we need to show it in a most positive light.
It does, it builds up then your children, your spouse, that builds up that level of respect also, which is such an important aspect. And I just want to sort of shift things a minute, but it's still on that same frame. Because when we chatted the other day, it was about digital estate planning. And this is all part of empowering women, is to have the finances to be able to, because I found you know, was 1 in 7 women will be homeless by retirement. Now, that could mean sleeping on someone's couch, not actually on the street, but that's big numbers, isn't it?
It's not just sleeping on someone's couch. Sometimes they're in their cars and they're unsafe, you know. A couch, they'd be lucky, but most of the time, you know, maybe a couple of days. But many women, I mean, the thought of a woman sleeping in a car is awful for me. It's heartbreaking. Just the thought of a woman in a car sleeping. Even when I see a man sleeping in his car, I think to myself, how can you do that? But a woman in a car, scary as. And it's starting as young as 50. And then by retirement, we don't know. And yes, the digital estate planning is about, look, the average Australian person has up to 300 online accounts. 300. I'm sure if you do
it. I can attest to that.
300 online accounts. You know, you want to buy something, create an account. You want to do something, create an account. We just go on creating accounts with front and center, and then we get forgetful about the passwords. There's a reason for that. Now, of these accounts, we know that our social media accounts are very, we are very attached to them, the Facebook, the Instagram, the Twitter, the, you know, these are important to us for a majority of many people.
Have LinkedIn, the one I coach in, LinkedIn.
LinkedIn for professionals. And then if you're a business person, you'll have a website, you'll have your domain name, you'll have PayPal accounts where people are buying from you, or whatever account you're using to bring to for people to pay, you sit somewhere. And then you have a lot of people who have cryptocurrency, Bitcoin and the works. Now, more and more people have, there are online bank accounts, which are only online. You can't walk into those banks. You have investment accounts, you have gambling accounts, you have subscriptions to magazines, to newsletters, to porn sites. Anything is available online. And I'm not, there's no judgment what you're subscribing to. You've got money going in or out of these accounts. Now, when you do your wills and estate, you do your will and you go and see a wills and estate lawyer, he will say to you, great, let's do this, let's do that. But then, have you got, would you like a clause for your, a digital clause in your will, which includes all your digital assets? When you look at your wills and estate lawyer and you'll say, what's that? He will explain to you what I've just said. Mm-hmm. Then he's not going to do it for you. You have to go out there and do it. So that means putting your someone who's going to be responsible for your Facebook account, your Twitter account, your social media account, your Instagrams, your email, your online banking, your cryptocurrency, all of these need to have someone to act on your behalf if you are not, if you're incapacitated or if you die.
Yeah.
Sadly,
and
we'll die, you know.
Yeah. I know I received a friend request the other day from someone that just passed away recently. So someone had hacked her Facebook page and received this friend request. It was just awful.
It's awful for you.
Yeah.
And look, I was approached last May by a few women who said to me, one was, my husband passed away in the most, and her husband was a lawyer, yeah? She said, in the most traumatic circumstances, traumatic for the family, but he was killed. And she's still receiving Facebook requests. So it's so-and-so's birthday and then all things from his account. And imagine what that feels like. She hired a lawyer to get Facebook to shut down their account. It took months and lots of money. They couldn't shut down the Facebook account. Eventually, they did an in memoriam account for that person,
right.
Eventually, but after a lot of trauma and a lot of money spent on a lawyer. Another one said, well, my husband had these accounts online, but we couldn't get to it because it was an investment account. There was up to $3 million in that. They couldn't get it. And I can tell you that lady has still not got access to that.
So it wasn't in joint names. If it was in joint names, she could.
Correct. It wasn't in joint name because, you know, not everyone shares things. Some people will do things on their own and they'll tell you, yes, I've got this. I've got everything in hand. We've got a will. But what people don't understand is your will does not include the online accounts. Your will is all your physical assets. Mm. Your online assets needs a completely different clause attached to it. And you need to know about these. And there are so many people who find out while they're grieving and they have to put the estate in order that there's all this money in this account, that account. And, you know, and they cannot access it because every online account nowadays needs two-factor authentication. And what happens when you go online and what happens when somebody passes away, you shut down their phone because you don't need it. Mm. Their emails get shut down. So try and getting their phones reopened again. No chance whatsoever to get that open.
Yeah.
So you don't have the two-factor authentication. And remember, you're committing fraud accessing someone's account after, you know, post-mortem. So yeah. You can't do that. You know, you can be arrested for accessing an account, especially if you're not the beneficiary of the online accounts. It has a lot of repercussions. So these women came to me and said, we don't want other women to go through this, what we've been through. We don't want women to lose. We want women to be able to have that conversation with their partners. If partner doesn't want to share what they've got, it's okay. They just need to put things in place so that if something happened to them, it's not while you're mourning them that you have to go, you know, lose all your hair because you need to try and access the digital world. So then I did a lot of research and I put together an online course to educate such women. You don't have to be tech savvy. I mean, I'm certainly not tech savvy. You just need to know what to do, how to do it, and how to do everything. So I educate people, but with the idea being especially women, how to do this, how to have this conversation with their partners, with their children who are making money, who are earning, who have a mortgage, how to explain this to them so that they are at least educated. Whether they act on it or not is something else.
And yeah, and this is a big topic. So, you know, looking at it with what you've done, I think it is extremely valuable for people. And that's part of that whole empowerment. We've been chatting for quite a while here, Desiree. Look, there's so many good points in here. And how can people get in touch with you? And we normally do three takeaways, but we've already done that throughout the thing. But I know you had some quick personal takeaways as well, didn't you?
Yes. Look, I'll do the takeaways and my contacts. So my three takeaways will be actually, I don't remember what I gave you. Can you read them out?
I can. Be born confident. So owning that confidence, I'm thinking you've said we all have skills necessary and walk with fear, which is one of the other ones that you gave as well.
Yeah. When we're born as children, if somebody puts you on a bike and teaches you, you don't just get on a bike, fall off and walk away. Most kids learn how to ride the bike eventually, learn to swim. We have that confidence. We were born with confidence. Somewhere along the way, we lose it. Remember, you've always had confidence. You've lost it. Find it again somehow. And if you can't, get someone to help you find it again. Mm-hmm. The second one is
skills.
The skills. Mm. As women, we have the skills inside us. But every time I speak to a woman on a coaching and we start, she says, oh, no, but we wouldn't have enough experience to do that. I don't have any skills to offer to this employer. And then I start going through, you can do this, you can do that, you can do that, yeah. Well, that means this. Did you know that? Really? Suddenly they realize they've got it. So don't doubt yourself about your skill. You have it. Just needs explaining what it translates to in the professional world. And the fear part I explained earlier on, be aware of the fear. Know it's there, but walk along with it. Don't let it paralyze you.
That walking with you. It's a very different feeling. Completely
different feeling. You're aware it's there. It's over your shoulder. Say, I know you're there and I am afraid, but let's try it anyway. What's the worst that can happen? I won't get it. I won't win. Mm-hmm. I won't succeed. But you already know that because you haven't got anything to lose. So why not? I can be contacted through my website. You can Google me, Desiree, or on LinkedIn, Desiree B. Carey.
Okay, and all of the contact details will be in the show notes anyway.
Thank
I've
you.
thoroughly enjoyed our conversation. There was so much covered in there, and the digital stuff I found so fascinating, the financial things. I think it's highly valuable content for people to investigate and check out what you do with that course, because the investment in that could save you millions of dollars, as some of
Well,
your
save
clients
you,
claim.
gain you. Yeah, gain you
Gain you,
millions of
gain you.
dollars.
But yeah, not
Yes,
save you, but
because
gain you. It's
you don't
wonderful.
want to know that there are $3 million or whatever amount of dollars sitting in an account that you'll never be able to access, you know?
That
So,
would
yeah.
be quite devastating.
Yeah, you know, some people, 20,000 is enough, 10,000 is enough. So, but you don't know. People play betting. There's lots of winnings on the betting accounts, and Australians bet a lot. I mean, not just Australians, but
Yeah,
you know, so
it's
look, thank you so much for having me. It's been a real pleasure speaking to you, Janine. It's the first time I talk so much about the 21st century digital assets and digital estate planning. Thank you for the opportunity for doing that, Janine. I'm so happy. Thank you.
most welcome. I loved our conversation. And that is another episode of the We Are Women podcast. Remember, you can jump on JanineVosper.com and book a complimentary strategy call. You can chat about how you might grow your business, change your mindset, wherever that comes from. And as you know, if you've been listening for a while, if it's not just what I may be able to help you with, but the people that I know and the amazing talent I've had on my shows. Have a fantastic day, week, month. Enjoy and feel empowered. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Goodbye.
So, do you feel stuck in a rut in business? Visit speechperfect.com.au and download Janine's free ebook to avoid the five most common stumbling blocks women face in business. It's jam-packed full of tips to overcome the barriers that could be holding you back from the success that you dream your business will be. We would love you to leave a review of today's episode and share this podcast with other women in need of entrepreneurial inspiration. Subscribe to the next episode now and join the We Are Women community. Facing challenges and overcoming setbacks is part of doing business. Whether you have the expertise to survive them or not could mean the difference between success or failure. Welcome to We Are Women, featuring revealing conversations that provide invaluable insights into the success secrets of female masterminds. A must listen for every entrepreneurial woman. Now here's your host, Janine Vosper.